You may be seated. We're here on case 11-1486 on behalf of the petitioner, Mr. Gardner.
Good morning, Madam Chief Justice, other members of the court. My name is Richard Gardner. I represent the petitioner, Westfield Insurance Company, in this case. This is an insurance coverage action with questions certified from the United States Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit regarding liability insurance coverage for the respondent, Custom AgriSystems, for construction defect claims for their work done on an $8.5 million grain facility in Upper Sandusky, Ohio. My client prevailed in the district court, and Custom AgriSystems appealed to the Sixth Circuit because it was still facing claims of hundreds of thousands of dollars from the general contractor, Young Love Construction Company. Sixth Circuit, having looked at this case, determined that Ohio law was conflicted on two important questions to this case, as well as to many construction defect cases, and then certified those questions to this court for resolution. Two questions before this court are as follows. First certified question: are claims of defective construction workmanship brought by a property owner claims for property damage caused by an occurrence under a commercial general liability policy? We're asking this court to answer that question no, because the damages that were sought against Custom AgriSystems in this case were not damages because of property damage caused by an occurrence, but were in fact contract damages, expectation damages.
Does the policy at issue define the term occurrence?
It does, Your Honor.
How is it defined in the policy?
It's defined as an accident, and then this court has gone on and has defined, and also continuous exposure to the same injurious conditions. And so it's the same type of definition that this court has looked at on many occasions and has found to be unambiguous. So the real question is, Justice O'Donnell, as we look at the insuring agreement here with respect to this first question, is whether or not the types of damages that we have involved in a construction defect case, sort of the quintessential case of...
The question is, are construction defects accidents?
And also, are they property damage? I think it's both, because when we begin to look at the type of terms being used here, and what we'll talk about here as we go through the argument, is that this is a tort context for CGL coverage.
And then is that only as defined in that particular policy?
No. These are standard ISO-based policies. So the Insurance Services Office is the organization that many insurance companies use to write their policies for them. And so most modern commercial general liability policies will include this type of language. And so where we see the real front lines or construction defect coverage work is with respect to not whether or not builders risk coverage or surety bonds or errors and omissions coverage applies, but whether or not commercial general liability policies will apply to these types of claims.
So is this contract interpretation that the federal court should have done, or is this a matter of Ohio law that we should be defining?
This is a matter of Ohio law because there is a conflict between Ohio's appellate districts as well as a conflict across the country on these issues. Well, obviously, we have 12 appellate districts in Ohio. We have the 8th District and the 10th District, which have both said these types of claims would qualify and fall within the insuring agreement. You have the 5th District, the 1st District, and others that find that they don't. So when the 6th Circuit looked at this case, they said, you know, we recognize that there's a divide under Ohio law here, that these contracts are interpreted by Ohio law. And while we can try and divine what this court would do, we feel that we have a resolution available to us under Supreme Court Rule 18 that we are encouraged by the United States Supreme Court to do in order to preserve the integrity of our federal system and to bring it to you, Justice O'Donnell, and to your colleagues to tell us how this should work out. So that way, whether you're in federal court, federal district court, whether you're in the Sixth Circuit, whether you're in Cincinnati or Columbus or Cleveland, hopefully we have the same rule of law being applied and we don't have different outcomes based upon venue. They'd be based upon facts and evidence and so forth, rather than different interpretations of Ohio law.
What was the argument or what was the rationale of the 10th and 8th that said that basically poor workmanship, construction-type defects fit under a more of a tort claim type policy? How did they make that leap?
I don't think they made it in terms of it was a tort model. I think they looked at it and said, we're going to look at the policy and we're going to take these terms out of context. And we're going to say, well, it could be interpreted this way, and therefore we will interpret it this way. The problem with that is that when you lift words out of their legal environment, context, they're bereft of their meaning. And so you end up with a situation where you could have the same word mean different things which contextually it shouldn't mean. Let me give you an example that's not an insurance example. Let's suppose I give you a document, and Justice Pfeiffer probably knows about this. I give you a document that talks about what the meaning of the word offsides means. Okay, and offsides isn't defined in the document. If I begin to look at that word and I see it talks, or that document talks about quarterbacks, linebackers, it talks about first downs and touchdowns and so forth, I'm going to reasonably conclude that that's talking about American football, and offsides is a penalty in American football that has a certain meaning. If, on the other hand, I'm looking at that document and it talks about goals and penalty kicks and corner kicks and throw-ins, then I'm going to say I can reasonably conclude this is talking about soccer. And offsides in soccer is a completely different type of penalty. And so, depending upon the context, the exact same word has two different meanings. Moreover, we can take that same document, Justice Stratton, and we can say, from this, even if we're not talking about offsides, we can extrapolate certain things which are implicit in the assumptions. For instance, if I asked you in that same example, I could say, Justice Brown, what's the type of ball, or what's the shape of the ball we have in this sport? Well, if it's a football, we know it's going to be oval. If it's a soccer, it's going to be round. So we can extrapolate a number of things from that based upon the context.
And the districts that went the opposite direction, what was the difference in their rationale that led to the outcome that there was no coverage?
The first district, the fifth district, and others that follow that line of coverage have said, look, when we're talking about an agreement, a contractual agreement to build a certain building, there are certain things that come along with that agreement. And the damages that you're seeking when you say, I was promised a building of a certain high quality and a certain high character, and what was delivered to me was something less than that. What you're obtaining is expectation damages. You didn't actually ever own that building when it wasn't damaged, at least in the context we're talking about. I mean, there are construction defect cases where there is real property damage. But in this kind of a case like we're dealing with here, what we're talking about is simply, I was promised something under these contractual specifications, and I was given something which was less than that. And I'm entitled to the difference between what was promised and what was actually delivered. And that's the nature of
it. Is there coverage available in the marketplace for that type of damage?
When we say coverage, the answer is probably no, and it depends upon what we're talking about here. You know, the most common kinds of coverage we would be looking at in those kinds of contexts is you'd be looking at a performance bond or a surety bond, where if you have a contractor who was financially unable to finish or was, went out of business, something else happened, unable to pay, then the bond would be able to step in and to pay those things. Of course, that's not really insurance because they can go back against the contractor, the surety can. You can look at something, for instance, was the building poorly designed? Then you might be looking at errors and omissions coverage for an architect or an engineer or someone else like that. And we have design issues that were involved in this case as well. And the reason why that would apply is because unlike CGL coverage, which is limited to accidental property damage, accidental bodily injury, errors and omissions coverage is designed to provide coverage for financial losses as a result of professional malpractice.
Counsel, we're a bit handicapped here because we've just got one side, one picture being painted. One could look at this and conclude what was really going on is PDS, that's the owner of the property.
Correct.
One to gyp the contractor out of $1 million, just didn't want to pay for the whole deal, so they... In what you've given us, there's at least an allegation that the roof damage, that the concrete may have been a little substandard, but it didn't matter. And the roof damage may have occurred from PDS doing a faulty job of emptying the bin at some point. So then it's not it. It really is just a contract matter if that's what's going on, and we don't know, right?
Well, actually, we do know. We do know. First of all, I would say I don't know that you're handicapped at the other side of that here. I would like to think that you've got everything that you need, Justice Biden, to decide this case. But with respect to the claims, it's pretty clear. PSD, if you read our brief at pages 4 to 10, which set out what we believe are the material facts for this, it's pretty clear what the property owner was looking at. They brought only two claims against the general contractor, which were breach of contract and breach of warranty. And we've pointed out that in this context, although you can have breach of warranty claims, which might imply tort claims, under the facts and evidence in this case, you don't have that. They only brought those two claims. They said, we were promised something, we were delivered something less. And in fact, with respect to custom agri-systems, it was the same thing. Initially, they talked about there being a problem with the concrete, but their own expert then backed off that idea and said, no, this isn't a compressive problem with the concrete. What we've got here is that the silo that custom agri-systems provided was designed wrong. And it was supposed to have a greater output than what it actually had. And by the way, they didn't train us the way we're supposed to train on this. And so there was this so-called asymmetrical discharge that caused the silo to collapse, which was Custom Ag's own work, that was caused because we weren't trained on this right by Custom Agri-Systems and by Youngluff. And so, again, we didn't get the benefit of our contract, and so we have purely economic losses that are involved here. That's why Judge Carr, when he first heard this case, initially said to me, well, you have to defend this case because there at least is implied tort claims that could be here. And as the record developed then, and we went back to him on a motion for reconsideration and said, Judge Carr, you have to look at this again because it's clear what PSD is asking for and what Young Love is asking for. These are purely expectation damages. No property was damaged here. They're just saying they didn't get what they were promised. And if I'm in the 10th district or if I'm in the 8th district, I get a different result than I
now
get in front of Judge Carr.
You said the bin collapsed. Did the whole bin collapse or was there just some roof damage?
You had roof damage and the bin collapsed, but the bin was able to be put back into shape, and then you had some of the roof damage that was involved. And the question was, what caused that? And their expert came out with this asymmetrical discharge. That is, they misused the silo. And so they began to explain why they misused the silo.
So, Mr. Gardner, if we answer your certified question, no, we don't get to the second question at all.
You're correct in the sense of going through this, that if you answered the certified question one, no, in this case you wouldn't have to reach that question. But there will be cases where you do have that. We're asking this court to answer that question, too, because they're logical corollaries to each other, if you think about it. I mean, if we're talking about a breach of contract, a cause of action, and we're going to have a situation where there isn't damages because of property damage caused by an occurrence, and we solely have a situation that doesn't fall within the insuring agreement, well, we never get past the insuring agreement. But if we do, and I'm not going to trust my imagination enough to say that I can think of every possible scenario, but if we do have some scenario that isn't this case where we do have some property damage that's there, the question is, then, does that exclusion, that contractual liability exclusion, preclude that coverage? So we're asking the court to answer both questions because, again, that's an area where Ohio law is in conflict. This is not going to do away with coverage and construction defect. What it's going to do is it's going to clarify the situation so we don't spend years fighting about the coverage issues. And
So is your answer to number one, no, it depends? I mean, it sounds as though you're saying there may be situations where the answer to number one would be yes. Because the second question then says, if the claims are considered property damage caused by an occurrence, then does the contractual liability exclusion stop coverage for those claims?
Correct. I mean,
it seemed that the second question was dependent on an answer to the first. And if you're saying there's some situations where you would say yes to the first question, that's where you're losing me.
Right. And the reason why is because you may have situations where you're dealing with a construction defect claim where we're talking about damage to property other than the insured's own work or product. It's easy to see maybe on a simple case with just a home, maybe you don't have that situation. But if we're talking about a $10 million project with all kinds of subcontractors, you may have someone who damaged somebody else's work product or something else that happens. And so the answer to the first question is important because we're in this context, we're saying unless you have that damages because of property damage caused by an occurrence means that you must have damage to property other than the insured's own work or product.
Okay.
If you have that, then you get past the insuring agreement. If you don't have that, you never make it past the insuring agreement. You never get to the contractual liability exclusion.
Okay. Thank you.
That's all I have, Your Honors, unless you have additional questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision.